powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
This hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Some things you guys need to know that I'll be reminding you of. Number one, it is Jake's final day with us, his final show on the Jake and Stacy show. The three of us going to make sure that we have a really fun one, talking Mariners, even though it wasn't a fun game. Going to take a look ahead with some DePoto sound, talking DK Metcalf, and most importantly, making fun of Jake. That's probably the most important thing we'll be doing today.
Of course. Don't worry, you're going to get yours too. Okay.
Oh, well, that sounds like a threat, Curtis, so mark that down. We will go to HR later.
I'm leaving at the end
of the
day.
It's Jake's last day. He can kind of do whatever he wants.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's just your final day on your job. Doesn't it seem like, has anyone ever, you put in your 2 weeks or you quit the job you had when you were a teenager? Like, I was a waitress. I put in my 2 weeks. And all of a sudden, I was like really good at my job because I just stopped caring. You just don't even care anymore. All of a sudden, I was like putting in orders, just like flying through the kitchen. I was amazing. I should do that more often. Quit my job more.
Quit
often
your job.
Yeah.
We're already down.
I think there are some people that are like, yeah, please do. Is DK Metcalf the last summer superstar signing we should see here in Seattle? Jake, you wanted to go in the DK Metcalf direction for this one. So if you're waiting for that Mariner stuff and the Jerry DePoto sound, we're going to get to it later. But you wanted to talk DK. Why?
Well, the reason why I want to talk about DK Metcalf is because of this conversation, very simply put. Do you think that this experience is going to be the last time we see a superstar signed in the summer?
I sure hope not.
Why? I don't mean a superstar signed to Seattle ever again. I mean a summer signing of a superstar here in Seattle.
Okay, you need to clarify what you mean here, because do you mean like that?
I mean,
do you mean that John and Pete typically don't make those signings in the middle of summer?
Yes, because we watch Jamal Adams get the highest contract ever by a large margin, and the price goes up and up and up. We saw it happen with Bobby Wagner. We saw Frank Clark end up leaving town because you end up waiting and waiting and waiting, and now the DeMarcus Lawrence deal, you know, comes down, and the price is too high, it's too rich for their blood, and now they've got to trade him. Russell Wilson, changed the mold the last contract, but his second contract, he got paid at the end of the summer. Do you think that through this experience, now that they've had it, that they will change their mold in this philosophy? Or
no.
Do you think that they will stay fast and hold pat with this?
I think they stay fast. I think that John and Pete have no interest whatsoever in changing their approach, whether it's philosophical, whether it's schematically on the field, or whether it's with the way they handle contracts and anything off of it. You have to think that one of the best safeties they've ever had got into, in fact, two of the best safeties they've ever had got into contract disputes with them. They didn't cave for either player. There is one player, a single player, a franchise quarterback, the best quarterback they've ever had, where they moved that timeline because of the artificial deadline given by his own agent, Mark Rogers, that being like the April 14th signing or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That was really the only time that they ever kind of had their hand forced with something. And even then, a couple months ago, they said, you know what? You want to be in an offense that is so philosophically different from what we want to do that we are choosing our philosophy, our way over you. So no, I don't see them changing anything about the way they do things.
Do you like that? Do you agree with it?
I don't agree with everything they do, but I think one of the most important things you can do is know who you are.
Okay.
And I think that if you
in doing
waver
so,
too
you're
much,
costing yourself a lot of money, though. You realize
by
that,
not,
right?
By what? Not signing DK over the summer?
Sooner. No, by doing it sooner. By doing it before you know the draft, by doing it and having these discussions very clearly after the season. I don't think so.
Well, Pete Carroll said we intended to get this done before now at OTAs.
He says intend on a lot of things, okay?
He does say intend on a lot of things.
I would not necessarily hold that true. Maybe intend before mandatory minicamp.
Yeah.
But I don't believe that they were trying to get things done and wrap things up, you know, earlier in the draft.
What do you think they risk by waiting until the start?
They risk a couple things. One, they put themselves in more harm from a cap perspective because they have to pay more money, right? And more guaranteed money in the long run because you have other contracts that are getting signed and are raising the floor of the salary or the contract that you're now going to have to give to your upcoming superstar.
I mean, what are we looking at, Debo?
We're looking at Debo. We're looking at Terry McLaurin. There's already been the AJ Brown stuff. There's, I mean, if they would have approached Stacey, if they would have approached DK Metcalf, and they said at the time, right, we're going to pay you $21 million or $22 million after the season was over, we would have looked at that at the time and we would have said, whoa, that is mega bucks. How does everybody feel about that? And then you watch this offseason progress and you watch it and you go, actually, you know what? We kind of got a steal. And when you do it for a player like Tyler Lockett, I don't know why, and you saw how well that worked out. I don't know why you wouldn't try to do that, you know, with other players, especially after what happened with Jamal Adams, where that price point just continued to rise, you know, later on in the summer. It's the one thing, Stacey, out of the Seahawks and this organization do a lot of amazing things. John Schneider, Pete Carroll do a lot of amazing things, and they have an unbelievable run of success here in Seattle. Unbelievable. It's just the one thing that I truly do not understand, because I think it ends up biting them, it ends up hurting them in the long run financially, than it does, you know, saying, all right, we're just going to focus and compartmentalize the offseason and only work in these parameters, and we'll wait on those bigger contracts to the summer. I've just never really truly understood that. And again, with DK Metcalf, now you're having to pay substantially more than what you would have if you had tried to address this earlier in the offseason.
I mean, I do think that there's a chance that they could have gone to DK and said, or his agent, and said, hey, we'll give you 24.5 or whatever. And his agent would have said, no, we're going to wait and see what AJ Brown does. We're going to wait and see what Debo does. He and Debo have the same agent.
They could, but also that is looking far into the future. No one knew that Davante Adams was going to get traded. No one knew Tyreek Hill was going to get traded, right? So you could say that, but if they would have came to them at the time, where it would have been a very, very big contract, it would have been by and large a massive deal. Remember, we were talking about $20 million. When this offseason started, the number was $20 million. Now we're talking about 25 plus to 26. Yeah, 25 is the floor, okay? Now we're saying 25 is the floor. That is substantially more money that has progressed through this offseason. And that's one thing that I just wish that they would change from a philosophy standpoint when it comes to the superstars, because, you know, from an organizational perspective, now you get caught up in what has happened before. What's happened before, and now it drives up the price of how much you're going to have to pay that superstar. This is not a conversation about whether or not to pay DK Metcalf. Mm-hmm. This is not whether you take
it's
care of your superstars. It's about when you do it. Because in the long run, that affects your cap, your maneuverability, what you're willing to do, what you're able to do in the long run, and how you build this team.
So you're saying, I think that they should sign their superstars as soon as possible.
I would say it's better to get out ahead of it than it is to be at the mercy of what everybody else does, right? And you know, we had Rob Staton on Tuesday, I think that was, Curtis, and talking about, look, If this continues to prolong and Debo Samuel contract resets the market again, there's got to be a price point that the Seahawks look at it for DK Metcalf and say, yeah, that's too rich for us.
I'm guessing 30.
I mean, you don't want to lose out on that. You don't want to risk that possibility. And that's what concerns me, is I just hope that they're able to get this DK Metcalf deal done before Debo Samuel. That's really what it comes down to for me, because I become increasingly concerned, because if you prolong this into the next offseason, then someone like Justin Jefferson could easily be up for a new extension,
yeah,
and that could reset the market again. I mean, this thing's only going to go up and up and up.
I don't foresee them prolonging this into the season.
I do too. I would be shocked, but what I'm saying is if Debo Samuel's contract came down and he got 26 or 27, And DK saying, all right, I'm next man up. I want a little bit more, right? Who was it? Minka Fitzpatrick. He got 18.4, right? He surpassed Jamal Adams, right? DK, the next guy up. I want a little bit more than what that last contract was, right? That's what concerns me, because at some point the Seahawks are going to have to push back, and it sounds like they already kind of have already in contract negotiations, or DK would have been there for mandatory minicamp.
Yeah. I understand philosophically why they do things the way they do, because no one player is bigger than the philosophy. No one player is bigger than the program. No one player is bigger than the team.
But why does it have to wait until the summer? That's one thing we have not heard from this organization. I mean, they've been always very open and honest and appreciate that about John Schneider and Pete Carroll in terms of their philosophy and why they stick to those principles. But, I mean, there's other teams, there's other organizations that get contracts done during the same timeline. So why is it so progressively it has to be this way?
I mean, I just think contracts are exceptionally difficult. I mean, look at Baltimore and Lamar Jackson right now. He is the best quarterback they've had in how long? And he fits their system perfectly, and they're trading away some weapons for him and still haven't extended him. And people are looking at him like he might be traded. I mean, they have a franchise star, and they're still figuring out what to do with his extension. I just think that their extensions are very, very difficult when you're dealing with a superstar who sees himself as a integral part of your team, which mm-hmm. I'm sure is how DK sees himself now in Seattle.
Right. It is. And, you know, there's somebody, there's a lot of text messages coming in here on this topic, which I love. But someone texted in and said, don't you think the Seahawks made an offer and turned it down? Well, yeah, that's exactly what happened. They made an offer. He turned it down. And we don't know the parameters of the discussion or the numbers that are floating around, but clearly it was not to where DK Metcalf, what he liked. But my point being is that same number that they probably threw out would have been very much accepted earlier this offseason had it been given.
I see what you're saying. I do. And it's just that there is a slippery slope with either. And that's what makes it difficult. If you decide to have the exact same approach every offseason, where we get those extensions done when we get back from that kind of July break and when we head into training camp. We've done that with Bobby Wagner. We've done that with Russell Wilson. We've done that with pretty much everyone, with the exception of anyone who is entering free agency as an unrestricted free agent like Quandre Diggs. Right. The slippery slope going the other way is that you get a deal done and then mess up your cap situation for other signings you might want to make, or your flexibility for other things you might want to do. I would imagine that is part of why they wait.
Possibly, as they're trying to make sure they tidy up all their books so that they know exactly what they have and what they're working with each time that they come to the negotiating table, right? I mean, That very easily could be the case. And, you know, it makes sense. I mean, they could get to June, rework some other contracts. Like, it gives them time to really make sure that they've got their ducks in a row before they make this mega extension. And you could understand that approach. It's just the only part that I just see the major downside of is that you're paying millions of dollars more than if you get it done earlier in the offseason, right? That is my point. And that's just, it's a trend, and it's a philosophy that they have, but it's just one of those philosophies that I've never really truly understood, because you end up paying a lot more for those star players.
All right, let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru, Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
First down, Jake, what was an experience with the Seahawks you will never forget?
There's a lot of experiences. However, number one that comes to mind, Stacey, is it was the first day I was signed to the Seahawks, and I thought, okay, I'm going to sign my contract, take a picture of me signing a contract, send to my family, how cool is this, get shown around, get my playbook, you know, just kind of get shown the digs a little bit, and take a breather, and then the next day I'll come back in and be ready to go. No, Stacy, I signed my contract. Practice, guys were walking out onto the practice field, and after I signed my contract, they said, okay, it's time to go to practice. And then I thought, okay, well, all right, I will go stand at practice. I'll stand on the sideline, get a feel for the tempo, and obviously I'm excited, and the energy, and it'll be great, and get to meet the guys, whatever. Oh, no, they threw me in in that practice.
And they fresh said, off the street.
Fresh off the street. Haven't taken a single look at the playbook. I don't know a single word of the terminology in OTAs. And I've got ball game, Will Herringer, who is who's still coaching in the NFL. He was the assistant quarterback coach, and he is rattling off the plays, Stacey. He's rattling off the plays. All right. Okay. All right, Jake, we got double right 200 jet, 200 jet stick dragon on one-on-one. Ready to go. And would not slow down for anything, right? Is speaking as fast as he can, and I'm like, bro, I don't know anything. I need you to tell me line for line what's going on here. It was the most stressful practice I have ever had in my life because I was calling plays and running plays that I had no idea what was going on. And afterwards, Pete Carroll was laughing and smiling and brought me over and was like, hey, you handled that really well. We just wanted to see how you would handle being thrown to the wolves like that. And I'm like, thanks. Thanks, guys. But I will. The level of anxiety that I had throughout that entire practice, I will never, ever forget it. And that day, I said I was never, ever going to show up not knowing the playbook. Like, I had to know everything because I was not going to let that happen to me again. It wasn't my fault, but there was no way I was going to be put in that position again, ever.
Second down. What's your record prediction for the Seahawks this season?
Well, my record prediction changes based off of who is the quarterback. So if you have Drew Lock or Geno Smith, I think this is a six-win team. I think this is a six-win team. And I feel pretty comfortable about that. If you get Jimmy G or Baker Mayfield in here, and really, I feel more comfortable about this prediction if Jimmy Garoppolo was the quarterback for this team. But I really, truly believe this becomes a 9-8 or an 8-9 type of team. Having a quarterback that has played games, that knows how to manage it, that has been in that franchise role before, and somebody like Jimmy Garoppolo or Baker Mayfield, for that matter, who know their role and how to play it, I think it's incredibly crucial. There is talent on this team. There is talent on this offense. No question about it. Now, do you have a quarterback that consistently get it done and can deal and can be accurate and make those decisions and make those big plays without putting your team in harm's way? That's the big question. And I think if you have an opportunity to snag somebody like Jimmy G or Baker Mayfield, you have to take advantage of that opportunity. But I think that that's how big of a difference the quarterback play will be for this team. Because overall, I do believe that the roster in and of itself has a chance to really grow and develop into a team that we're looking at the end of the year this year, Stacey, and say, man, the Seahawks, they've got something going on. And Lewis Riddick saying that this team is a sleeping giant, maybe we feel a lot more confident about that with how the way this season ends with a lot of these young players developing over the course of the year.
Third down. So for anyone who doesn't know, it is Jake's final show here, the final Jake and Stacey show. We're going to introduce the new co-host of this show coming up at 1:30. That co-host will be in studio. But in the meantime, third down, Jake, when do you start your new gig with Russell Wilson?
Right away, actually. After the show, I fly out to Denver.
Like today, after the show?
Have a camp, youth camp that we're doing tomorrow, the Russell Wilson Passing Academy.
Funny. Oh, weird. We're actually having a camp in Denver, too.
We're actually
launching a new branch of our quarterback camp.
A Denver-based location. Yeah. Jake and Stacey make quarterbacks better than
Curtis and Stacey make quarterbacks better than Jake Camp.
I can't LLC. Get rid of you.
Mile High Edition.
Mile High Edition.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
You thought we were great coaches at sea level?
Yeah. Just wait.
Altitude.
It honestly makes us better.
That's another 20 yards, I think.
At least.
I didn't even think about that.
Literally, one of the best drills we put our kids through is just how far can you throw this ball?
Yeah. Okay.
A lot of torn rotator cuffs amongst our clientele.
I'm sure. gosh.
Labrum tears account for 90% of our camp injuries.
And then next week, Russell's going to Europe, and so I have to go with him. I have to go with him to Europe and keep training him and make sure that he's ready and sharp and ready to go. So I'll be in Europe starting next week for like 10 days, and then San Diego, and then here we go. We got training camp, so it's going to be a whirlwind of an experience. Trying to move my family in the middle of that, so it's going to be a whirlwind of a couple months here, but. The gig starts right away. Right away. France, London, the whole deal.
Oh, wow. Oh, French Jake Heaps. How funny is that? To just imagine like Jake over there like, ha, ha, ha.
No, it'll more likely be me trying to figure something out, asking someone who doesn't speak English.
Oh, it's amazing.
You're going to be typing things into your Apple Translate and pressing the speaker button.
Yeah. Where can I find Bang energy drinks? Fourth down. Do you have Mountain Dew here?
A Mountain Dew?
I actually will just, I'll have you guys be my translators.
Yeah, no problem. I took French in high school.
Yeah.
I failed. Fourth down. Jake, what's one of the coolest things that can happen in a baseball game? This, of course, as always, tied to the something we're going to talk about in the timeline.
What's
one of your favorite things that can happen in a baseball game?
Oh, favorite thing, it has to be...
The text line, Jacques Heaps. Jacques Heaps.
I think a late game comeback win... There is nothing better than that in baseball. Like, when you're talking, like, you're down in the eighth or the ninth, you're down by, like, two runs, and you're able to come back from that, and you have a walk-off. I mean, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's a single, double, or if it's a home run. Mm. A walk-off in baseball, the place is going to go nuts. Going to go absolutely insane. But I love the energy and the buildup and the anxiety that ends up being created, not just from a walk-off hit or home run that wins the game, but Stacey coming from behind to get to that moment. Mm. That's what I love. That's one of the coolest things to watch in baseball.
So one of my least favorite teams and everyone's least favorite team, the Astros, did pull off something kind of cool the other day in baseball. Let's see how this ranks for your top things that can happen in a baseball game. That's coming up next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
This hour, Jake and Stacey, brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Jake, you're heading to Europe in a little bit.
This music would be perfect for Europe.
I mean, someone rightfully...
A discotheque.
A discoteca. Rightfully pointing out that in France, they don't pronounce the H, so it's Jacques Heaps. Is what you're going to be called. So if anyone wants to tweet at Jake, it's Jacques Heaps for the next. Until I notify you otherwise.
And there are some serious weirdos out there.
What do you mean?
Well, just saw someone from the text line sent this like massive paragraph, just telling me to send a message to Russell Wilson with this, just like all these crazy things.
Make sure to tell Russell Wilson I hate him. You are getting some really nice messages. Can I shout out Earl? So Earl Strassbaugh Twitter says, dude, I'm going to miss you on the air. We've had a few back and forths, and although I drew inaccurate conclusions about you in the past, I feel better as a human for having spent time with you every day, even though you did all the talking. Good luck, friend.
Well,
that's really sweet. A sweet message from Earl.
Stacey Curtis, like, I got to be honest. I was really... really, really nervous yesterday, making the announcement. One, because I can't believe I am making this announcement. Like, I truly, it's going to be really hard walking away from this show. Like, the decision to make it, to do it, to actually do it, to not be a part of the conversation every day, like, it's going to be really, really challenging. And it has been. You guys know that. But the overwhelming... wishes and support, and the amazing texts that we've been able to receive about how much the show has meant to you. I mean, it truly means the world to me, and I just want to thank you all for being so great and gracious about this and being so supportive. It seriously means the world to me. You guys mean the world to me, and I am very genuine when I say that, and I'm gonna miss you guys like crazy. There's no doubt about that. And I still will be on Twitter. I'll still be reacting to Seattle sports. I still will be talking to Mariners and Seahawks and all that stuff. But obviously it's not the same as being able to do it and connect with you guys this way. So thank you all. It is really truly meant a lot, and it's also kind of helped me as I'm making this transition and pursuing a new career path in coaching that I'm genuinely very, very thrilled about.
There are a lot of very beautiful, touching messages, even from people who are like, hey, I didn't especially like you when you first came on because of the UW stuff, or because they just for some reason didn't, or they disagreed with you on stuff, but they found that, because you would always engage. You always text listeners back and engage and get into debates, and you'd listen to callers, and you'd have a good-natured teasing and ribbing with people. So I think that you always excelled at stuff like that, at things that I personally struggled with, because I would always take it personally, and it would always hurt my feelings. You'd be like, hey, I mean, we all love sports. Who cares? And you always had such a good, positive outlook on it. And also, Curtis and I, as your friends, in addition to your coworkers, will just say, for anyone who's, I'm seeing the messages, there are people who are still upset about Russell Wilson and they're weirdly taking it personally. But first of all, it's an amazing opportunity for Jake, regardless of whatever team you root for. And secondly, a lot of you guys haven't met Jake and you don't know Jake. And I'm telling you right now, and I'm promising you right now, that he is genuinely such a kind, selfless, yes, giving person. And I feel bad that you never got to personally meet that person. If you find yourself feeling especially salty this morning, and you can, that's your right as a person. But I think it's very telling that Jake, the people who have met you and the people that have interacted with you, are sending you very loving messages saying, hey man, like, good luck, dude. Like, that's really cool. And I'm going to miss having you here. So yeah, that's mostly me and Curtis being salty on your behalf and defending you. But, yeah, but I, you know,
we're fighting for our guy.
We're fighting for our guy till the end. But there are overwhelmingly, I think, people in sports radio and sports as a whole, our community. If you hate someone that you listen to, you still both love the same teams. And there's lots of good-natured ribbing and debates and fights that happen. But overwhelmingly, people are good people and want to be good people.
Yeah.
And want to wish others well. And that's what a lot of what I'm saying. So
yeah. And like I said, it means a lot. And Stacey, gosh dang it, why I'm
trying to make you cry as many times as possible.
I'm trying
today
not to. Yesterday
we still have more than half the show to go.
Heck,
I know.
Yeah,
we still have more than half. And yesterday I honestly don't know how I read through it, because I had tears in my eyes that I was like trying to see the words through. So I'm trying not to be a blubbering mess today, but I mean, gosh, you guys know how much you guys mean to
me.
Oh,
like, look at this from the 425. Jake, you have been such a huge part of my life on a daily basis. I plan my day around every segment, reschedule meetings, pick up the kids late, eat lunch, and even make the dog wait for walks so I can catch four down territory and timeline. Thank you for the insight, laughs, and even the tears. I just, Jake, gonna miss the Jake-isms. I know you're such a family guy. Being away from family is gonna crush him. Don't do it. Please stay. Jake, wish you nothing but good luck. Jake, I cried with you yesterday. It's not gonna be the same. Who's gonna put Stacey in check? Okay, 425. I'm gonna block you.
I'm still here.
Curtis is still here.
I'm not
Don't
going
you worry.
Anywhere, 425.
But yeah, I mean, look, there are some things that the new co-host, that when they come on, there will be some things that they need to know. There's a manual that has been created in terms of how to deal with Stacey.
It's
what?
Like when you leave.
I'm not that difficult to deal
it's
with.
It's like
no,
when
no,
you
no.
get a babysitter,
Stacey,
and you're like, all right, here are some of the house rules. Okay, Stacey
exactly
cannot
right.
be out past 9 p.m. She needs to be kept in check, especially if she brings up her double major.
From the 253, I had full intention of rooting against Russell Wilson, but Jake, you've made it a lot harder since I know your success is now tied to his. Thanks for ruining my plans.
I'm sorry. I know that was that's something in this whole aftermath that people really want to hold on to, and I get it. I totally get it.
All right.
So I'm sorry I ruined that a little bit for you, but I appreciate you saying that, and it means a lot, and I'm excited for what's next and what's to come, but gosh.
Well,
I
right
mean,
now we're being sentimental,
I'm
but we're going to make fun of you.
Here, and I, you guys are the best.
We're going to make fun of you in about 5 minutes, but I promised you guys I would tell you what the Astros did, and I've wasted so much time, so I want to at least pay that off. The Astros pulled off a MLB first on Wednesday. Two immaculate innings in one game. They struck out the side on 9 pitches. So first starter Luis Garcia got his immaculate inning in the second.
An immaculate nice. Inning. 9 pitch, 3 strikeout. Rarely happens in baseball. Luis Garcia, an immaculate inning and a fist pump on his way to the dugout.
Then reliever Phil Maton got his in the seventh.
One strike away from another immaculate inning. There's been 107 immaculate innings in Major League history, and the Astros right here have a chance to get 2 in one game. Maton's pitch. Got him upstairs. Strike 3. Double your pleasure. Immaculate. for everybody. Luis Garcia did it in the second, and Maton does it in the seventh to Lowe, Duran, and Miller, the same three hitters.
Again, the same three Rangers batters, part of those pair of immaculate innings. Some trivia from Curtis. Some trivia from Curtis is Chris Sale and Max Scherzer are tied for the most immaculate innings in MLB history with three apiece, and the last Mariner to do so, that would be one Felix Hernandez, who threw the only one in Mariners team history in 2008 when Jake was just two.
That's amazing. How dare you? And Stacy was...
enough.
I mean, what? How old were you then? What were you
a
doing
teenager.
In this phase of life?
I was a young teenager.
I don't. That's not what I heard. Look, with this, it makes me hate the Astros more. And then also with that call, can we never say double the pleasure?
Double your pleasure.
Double your fun.
I'm sorry, but that phrase deserves to go in the trash. Never use it again. Okay, I don't want to hear about double the pleasure. Especially not from the Houston Astros. Let's not do that again, okay? No, thank you.
Now, Jake, you said that I was trying to get you to cry from reading you very, very kind and thoughtful and funny messages from listeners that are still coming in. I'll be collecting some of those. You guys are all awesome.
And succeeded, yes.
However, I hope that I can make you cry laughing by going over some of our favorite Jake moments, maybe some Jake-isms from over the years. That's coming up next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
All right, it's Jake and Stacy. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 in the Seattle Sports app. I'm going to get back to that Mariners conversation, the DePoto sound that I promised you guys. Coming up in 10 minutes. Before we get to it, though, Jake, you've had a lot of great moments with us over the years, and so Curtis and I collected some of those moments together so that we could revisit them, and I'm going to start with some of my personal favorite moments, which are Jake-isms. This is something that was actually coined by a listener, given that it's your last show here, we thought we'd revisit. Jake has a bad habit of mixing up idioms. So pot calling the kettle black, or teach a man to fish, those kinds of things. He just kind of mixes them up just a little bit. So let's revisit a few of those. First, with a jack of all trades, master of none, Jake's version.
Connor Weddington out of Stanford, you know, he got like a $20,000 signing bonus. Where is his fit? Is he a jack of all aces in terms of offensively, running back, slot receiver? Do you see him more of as a slot guy?
Jack of all.
The worst part is I said this to people. This wasn't just us, right? The three of us and having this conversation. No one else listens to this. So it's just the three of us. It's one thing to mess up when we're having conversation. It's another thing to ask a question to somebody else.
Yeah, he heard it too. Yeah, that's embarrassing for you. Anyway, so there's more. Now there's another one.
Yes, Stacey,
it's something you can really hang your hat on.
Yeah, you have nothing to lean your hat on.
You have nothing to lean your hat on. And the thing is, the thing that's tough about Jake-isms is, for instance, champing at the bit.
That's a conversation that we're all jumping at the bit to have.
We're jumping at the bit to have that conversation. The problem is that I start using these regularly as jokes, like, oh, he's a real jack of all aces, or you can really lean your hat on that. And then you realize no one else knows that you're purposely mixing it up because of Jake, and then you look like an idiot. That's what I've found myself running into.
Well, here's the thing, though.
Jake, I have more.
You need to know the art of Jake-isms.
Oh, like this one right here?
You stick to it. You trust it. You continue to believe in it. You continue to, you know, plant the seed and grow water.
Plant the seed and grow water.
Oh, no. Oh, no. How do I do this? I don't understand. But the key to Jake-ism, Stacey, is the fact that you have to, and it's amazing what you can get away with as long as you just say it confidently and you just roll right over it, right?
Oh, yeah. That's the trick that people do in sports in general that I didn't catch on to until later.
You just got to
go. Say it confidently.
You got to say it confidently. You just got to go. You've got to let the spirit move you. And everyone knows what you're talking about, right? Like, if they're close enough, if they're kind of in the ballpark, they know what you're saying, right? I mean, now look, it's a nationwide sensation of jack of all aces. Lean your hat on. I mean, you know, people have adopted this in their own life. I have had people come up to me and say, Stacey, legitimately, that they have started to use these things in their normal conversations
to see if
people react to them, which is probably one of the funniest things I've ever heard, which is hilarious. And yes, I know JD in the 509, I was not getting away with it. And you know what? It's okay. I understand. I messed up. I continue to mess up. And, you know, I will continue to do so. How about something like, and when I see this happen with other athletes, like Jameis Winston, what did he say about Chris Olave? He said that he's as smooth as the other side of the pillow, right?
Interesting.
Interesting.
He said one. The 360 said DePoto dropped a Jake-ism this morning. I mean, look, it happens. It happens. And I think it happens to athletes. I'm convinced it happens to people in the sports world more than anyone else. And I'm not sure what the connection is there. Do you have an idea what that connection could be?
No, I don't. But
I think maybe we've been to English class, but maybe we weren't like paying attention all the way through.
I was an English major, so I don't know how to help you.
I know.
It doesn't stop with Jake-isms, though, because there are plenty of other people that have stories about Jake. Here's Dave Wyman explaining how Jake might have been an important part of an infamous fight.
His jaw broke.
Yeah, by an open hand slap.
Really? That's impressive.
Yeah, big old meat hook just came in and knocked him out. But yeah, Jake Heaps was part of it.
That's Dave Wyman accidentally saying Jake Heaps was part of the fight that broke Geno Smith's jaw. Or how about this one? This is another good one. Jake doing a live read that sounds like he's getting a second wife.
The only person who loves my new tail ride more than me is my wife, and I might just have to get a second one.
That one's still one of my favorites.
But that was on the script.
I'm gonna miss Jake's
hybrid. That wasn't a Jake-ism. That was literally on the script. That was something where you guys told me that, and I was horrified. Absolutely horrified. There was a discussion that was had later on after that to make sure that didn't happen again. But oh my gosh, that was bad. What was the read that I did with phones? What was that? It was telling someone to call in.
Oh, I gotta find that one. So I don't think I have that one, but you said, make sure you take my phone and call in. No, don't take my phone. I'm just gonna miss Jake. In fact, you know, I'm also gonna miss pranking Jake. In fact, there was one time Jake was late to work. He has a terrible commute, so I'll give him that. Jake was late to work, and he missed an interview that Curtis and I ended up carrying out with, I think, some player.
Sergio Romo. The day before.
So we were like, oh, this is an amazing interview. This is the best interview ever.
And it was.
It was a fantastic interview. So the next day, we have an interview scheduled with Chris Flexen. We're like, Jake, you have to get here on time. Don't miss this again. Jake's stuck behind an accident. So what ends up happening, though, is that Chris Flexen, he's like some kind of workout. There's some kind of conflict where he ended up not being able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't tell Jake that he couldn't do it. We pretended once again that we had another interview that Jake missed, and we tried to guilt him about it for hours that morning.
We had to wake up early because there was another interview with a Mariners player, Chris Flexen this time. I was like, you know what? Yesterday was a bad day for me in that regard. I am not missing this one. I get up early, get out the door early. 2.5 hours later, I miss the interview. I'm late for show prep. What is going on?
Jake, Curtis and I have
we have something to tell you.
We have something to confess.
What?
Chris Faxon couldn't make the interview this morning, but we passed it up.
What?
So he did.
Are you serious?
Yeah, that's right.
I hate you so much.
Missed it for a second day in a row.
You're lying to me right now.
Jake, I have never met anyone easier to make fun of in my life, which is shocking coming from me.
Oh, no. I was so mad at you guys that day. I mean, you guys got me good. And like, legitimately, that was one of the few times that I've come into work, like, genuinely flustered. Genuinely, like, really, really upset and mad. Traffic in Seattle, especially in drive time, we all know that that's nothing new. But especially that day, it was awful. And I wanted to be there for that Chris Flexen interview so bad. And the fact that I missed it, I was so upset about that.
Here's one of my favorite things as I'm kind of wrapping this up here. We have Jake-isms that I forgot to include being sent in from listeners from the 360. Jake-ism, November 16th. Really took the sales out of me. taking wind out of my sails?
Yes, yes, that's exactly what I mean, okay? That's exactly what I mean, and I'm glad you guys have stayed with me. You haven't, you know, wanted to, you know, throw me overboard with all my Jake-isms and all of my little quirks and mistakes over the years as we do this show every day. But I got to tell you, radio's hard. Radio is hard.
Radio is so much harder than people think it is. I will scream this from the mountaintop.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, people, I was having a discussion with a buddy the other day and talking about radio, and man, that'd be so fun to do your job. And I was like, really? You want to do my job? You want to come up here and come up with content for 4 hours
a day? Or how about
right
now when I need to cut you off because yes, we're up against the clock and I'm going to get in trouble?
And I'm sitting here and saying, no, I will not let you give me the hook.
All right, so let's get back to that Mariners conversation. A lot of DePoto sound I didn't get to. What are they going to do? They got to figure this out. But we have plenty more coming your way next for Jake's final episode of the Jake and Stacey Show. That's next.